John Faso, I wanted to ask you about something Mitch McConnell says. He suggests cuts may be coming to Social Security and Medicare due to the growing deficit. How would you like to see these programs proceed? Should the massive tax overhaul be blamed?
No, actually, what's going on, Alan, is that if you look at the federal budget in two different buckets, you'll see 28% of federal spending is defense, and every other item of domestic expenditure, things like parks and roads and bridges and border enforcement and water and sewer grants and grants to local governments and states, opioids, NIH, CDC, all of that stuff, that's 28% of federal spending. 72% of federal spending is Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and interest. And guess, Alan, which bucket in the federal spending, the 28% bucket or the 72% bucket, is growing faster? It's obvious. It's the 72% bucket. And it's not because of pernicious Democrats or Republicans. It's because of demography. We are all living longer, and that's good. And but the programs that we rely upon, the so-called mandatory spending programs, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid in particular, are growing at faster rates than we can afford because we don't have enough young people working and paying into those systems behind us.
So, for example, you don't think Medicare for All would put a dent in our spending on Medicare as long as everybody was on it, and you do away with what you consider to be some of the parts of the program, Affordable Care Act, that you don't like?
No, it wouldn't. In fact, the estimates are is that putting everyone into the Medicare system would make illegal employer-provided health care, and it would cost $32 trillion over 10 years. It would be an extraordinary cost to the economy, and it would basically make it uncontrollable. You know, Alan, here's the thing I think everyone should recognize. Countries around the world that have a nationalized system.
I was going to ask you about that.
They do not eliminate the argument every year as to how much money they have to spend in their budget for health care. And it doesn't eliminate the argument as to what they'll cover. These arguments persist regardless of whether or not you have a kind of decentralized state-based system as the United States does, relying upon employer-provided health care with subsidies from the tax code, or you have a centralized system, say, like Canada or England, or you have a bifurcated system, say, as Germany does. These arguments continue. The advocates of a single-payer system would have you believe that there's a magic wand. And the magic wand is, if we just put everyone in this big bucket and we send all the control to Washington to determine who's eligible and what they'll pay, well, then it'll solve the problems. What they don't tell you is that it just changes the argument from to the national level. And the other thing, it's in Bernie Sanders' bill. Bernie Sanders' bill says that the payment to hospitals and medical providers, it will be the Medicare rate. That would bankrupt many hospitals because the current system we have today in the United States has private payers, the private insurance companies, and the employers and the workers cross-subsidizing Medicare and Medicaid. If you go to Medicare rates for everyone, for Albany Medical Center or for St. Peter's Hospital or for all of the smaller community hospitals, many of those places are going to go underwater financially.
Assuming the rules stay the same.
Well, that would be what the federal government would do.
Okay, because I only have 5 minutes more, John, I got to ask you a couple more questions.
Okay.
First of all, how about...
I'll give you 4.5 minute answers.
That's what I'm afraid of. Okay, so very quickly...
Substance takes time, Alan.
I understand.
When people are used to dealing with 30-second ads and 10-second sound bites, they don't get the full banana.
Sure,
and here at WAMC, we give people the full banana.
We do, and that's why we've always loved having you on for an hour at a time and doing all of that. Let me ask you this, John. Should we have a wall keeping immigrants out? Do you like the president's wall idea?
Well, there are places we have to secure the border. There are places where experts down there have told me that we need to either enhance the existing barriers that exist or build some new ones. We don't need a wall that's 2,000 miles long. That's not practical, and that would not be prudent financially or otherwise. But there are places where we do need,
okay,
a barrier. And we can also use technology as a cheaper and more efficient way to give us operational control of the border.
I take that's the back of your hand to the president who wants a wall all the way for those 2,000 miles.
Actually, he doesn't even say that. It's just the rhetoric makes people think that's what it is. But his Homeland Security Secretary has told me directly that that's not what they want.
Okay, so now let's talk about the migrant caravan, so-called caravan. Do you have any insights into all of this?
I have very few insights into it. I don't think that this is just kind of a spontaneous outpouring of people deciding to move north. How would you, you couldn't organize a Boy Scout expedition of 20 people without doing a lot of logistical efforts. How you could organize 10,000 people or more and feed them and move them and handle the logistics of their accommodations at night, et cetera, it means that there's something bigger here going on. At the same time, we have to deal with this on a couple of levels. One, we need an overall immigration reform, which does the border security, but also creates a system, particularly for agriculture, where people can come in and work and have permission to come in and work in the United States and go home.
So is that criticism of the president's policies?
What it is, it's a recognition that this issue is a heck of a lot more subtle and nuanced than the 10-second sound bites will provide you.
Let's talk about climate change. Are you a believer that the climate is changing in the world and we have to do something about it?
Yes. And yes.
And what is your solution as a congressperson who will help guide us in this?
Well, we have to make sure that we create more resiliency in our infrastructure because we are having more frequent 100-year floods every 10 years in a lot of places. And we have to try to continue on alternative energy strategies, particularly using the free market to create better technologies that we can use to reduce our dependency on fossil fuels.
Is that happening now?
It is happening now. The glaring example where it's not happening fast enough is in the transportation sector. And it's happened a great deal in the energy production sector. You know, we've greatly reduced the use of coal to produce electricity, moved to natural gas. In fact, natural gas is actually displacing nuclear, which is also 100% carbon free. Natural gas certainly is not, but nuclear is being displaced by the economics of natural gas.
So you are for fracking?
I think Barack Obama's administration said that natural gas development and exploration could be done safely. And I think Barack Obama's EPA said that, and I think that's a reasonable way, reasonable judgment.
I got 1 minute. Give me something of a closing argument into this campaign.
Alan, there's a lot of talk and rhetoric that has happened and that occurs on both sides. I say to people, I've lived and worked here for 35 years. My wife and I have raised our family here. I'm deeply imbued in this community. I understand the issues in the 11 counties, from Sullivan County up to Rensselaer County, out to Otsego and Montgomery County, and their parts in between. I've worked hard in a bipartisan fashion, ranking 18th out of 435, getting things done. As a freshman member of Congress, I had a major role in passing a big part of that opioid bill to deal with the importation of illegal substances like fentanyl from places like China, shipped through the U.S. mail. And we're, because of my legislation, which had 275 co-sponsors in the House, Democrat and Republican, we're going to shut down that avenue to bring those poisons into our country. I believe deeply in our country, in our Constitution. I believe deeply that we have to conduct ourselves in a civil and courteous manner in public discourse. That's what I have tried to do, and that's what I will continue to do if I'm honored with reelection.
John Faso, it's always wonderful to have you with us. You've always shared your thoughts with us, and I so appreciate it. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Alan.